From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, more reaction to the IPHC's recent halibut quota announcement. Commercial fishing in Cordova is being threatened by dip netters, and Yardarm Knot's Naknek cannery has been sold. All that, and just how much seafood can a sea otter eat if a sea otter could eat? Never mind. Coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
The International Pacific Halibut Commission's 2011 interim meeting was last week in Seattle. Left unsettled is what to do about 2012 quotas. At the heart of the issue is whether the harvest model the commission has been using to set past catches is reliable. The number of dead fish just aren't adding up. The current model asks for a 20% cut in the total allowable catch from 41 million pounds this year to 33 million pounds next year. The newly suggested model, which would factor in misestimations from previous years, calls for a 63% cut to the fishery, bringing it down to just over 15 million pounds. Fisherman Dave Kubiak says he saw the potential cuts coming.
I didn't know how bad it was going to be. You know, it seems to me a little worse than I expected, but I did expect it. My crew, you know, they're the ones that are probably going to hurt more than I am. That is, you know, they get a percentage of the take, and so their percentage, the take is smaller, so they're going to get fewer dollars. So what looked to them to be good earnings and made them happy is going to be a lot skinnier.
Fisherman Oliver Holmes says he'll be less affected by any potential cuts.
Fortunately for me, I'm an older fisherman, and I haven't recently purchased any, so I don't have a loan that I have to service for the IFQs. So the people that have bought halibut shares more recently could have faced some serious problems because of the poundage involved with their shares is shrinking rapidly, and at some point the price increases for the product won't keep up with the lower quotas.
The council has a number of options to consider. Among them is adjusting the allowable bycatch for trawlers, which in the Gulf of Alaska is currently 2,300 metric tons. That limit hasn't changed since 1986. Another concern is that much of the bycatch is smaller, sexually immature halibut. A million pounds of smaller halibut caught as bycatch is more damaging to the fishery than a million pounds of larger halibut. The North Pacific Groundfish Observer Program is looking at a possible overhaul to its operations. The restructuring could happen as soon as 2013 if funded this year. Kubiak says observation needs to be implemented consistently across the board.
If you're riding down the street and the sign says 35, you know, you might be going 35 or you might be going 48, you know, but if there's a police car right behind you, I bet you're going 32. And so observations change the way people behave, and nobody knows because it's all a speculative thing that the best observations that we have on vessels under, 58 feet or 60 feet is 30% of coverage. There aren't any observations on halibut boats and longliners that I know about. In the best world, you know, we'd have at least a couple of years of 100% observations of everybody so that we'd know what the real process is and what fish are really being caught, wasted, and destroyed, or whatever. And we don't know that now. We have no idea. You know, we speculate, we build scientific models to try to figure it out, but we really don't know what it is.
The IPHC will further address halibut quotas at its next meeting, January 24th through the 27th in Anchorage. It appears the Japanese seafood giant Marubeni has purchased another Alaska cannery. Intrafish and Seafood.com are both reporting Marubeni will buy Yardarm Knot's Naknek plant. The purchase price is reportedly $47 million. The 43-acre facility, which sits on the north shore of the Naknek River, can produce 12,000 tons of product a summer. At its peak, the facility employs 450 people. Marubeni already owns the North Pacific Seafoods Cannery in nearby Peterson Point.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
The Alaska Supreme Court heard arguments in Fairbanks on Monday in a case involving the contested status of the Chitina dipnet fishery. The Copper River salmon fishery, popular with urban Alaskans, is currently classified as personal use, so when fish run short, dip netting is a lower priority than subsistence fishing. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the case, which revolves around the definition of subsistence, has repercussions well beyond the Copper River.
The battle over whether Copper River dip netters from Anchorage and Fairbanks qualify as subsistence users stretches back decades. There have been numerous court rulings, and the Fish Board has gone back and forth on whether dip netting at Chitna qualifies as a customary and traditional use. The case the Alaska Supreme Court is currently considering is again aimed at clarifying the situation. The Chitna Dip Netters Association and the Alaska Outdoor Council's Conservation Fund want state criteria used to define subsistence thrown out. Dip Netters attorney Mike Kramer says the regulations are out of line.
Regulations that were created back in a time when Alaska recognized a rural preference have survived, and they continue to allow the Board of Fisheries to distinguish among Alaskans.
The Alaska Constitution mandates equal access to fish and game, and the Supreme Court has upheld that, but the state has failed to resolve the urban versus rural discrepancy, leaving the fish and game boards to grapple with the status of harvests like Chitna dip netting. Kramer says legal wrangling will persist as long as the state statutes dictate a rural subsistence preference.
Lack of any changes in legislation and in regulation is going to continue to involve the Supreme Court in all these skirmishes when, you know, the boards of fish and the boards of game continue to try to impose rural preferences and priorities for folks who live in rural areas of the state against our Constitution.
Kramer says the Copper River dipnet fishery is unique in that it's on the road system, primarily involves urban residents, and competes with a commercial catch that accounts for the majority of the harvest. During Monday's hearing, the state defended its regulations and the criteria relied on to make subsistence determinations. Senior Assistant Attorney General Lance Nelson says it's the prerogative of the board to decide what's a customary and traditional use.
Our position is that criteria all consistent with the statutory authority and the legislative intent set out in legislation and don't raise any constitutional issues at all.
Nelson acknowledges that the Chitna dipnet fishery is a tough call, citing very close decisions on its status by the Fish Board. Upper Copper River Otna people have intervened in the case on the state side. The Otna have subsistence status, and dip netters are a competing interest. Otna attorney John Sky Starkey says defining subsistence is essential to protecting it.
Otherwise, if they don't, that dilutes everyone's opportunity, including hunting guides, lots of people, because it expands the subsistence take way beyond what the authentic subsistence use is.
The Supreme Court took arguments under advisement, but there's no timeline for it to issue a ruling. Meanwhile, the Fish Board is again reconsidering the status of the Chitna fishery. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their families. AMSEA at www.msea.org. or 907-747-3287. And by the Pebble Partnership, listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
New report says Southeast Alaska sea otter boom has cost the region close to $30 million. Most is income lost as sea otters consume shellfish and crab that otherwise would be harvested by commercial divers and fishermen. Coast Alaska said Schoenfeld has more.
Otters were reintroduced to Southeast in the 1960s, and for a while, they remained a rare sight. But recently, their population has boomed, mostly along the outer coast and in southern Southeast. That means the voracious eaters are consuming more and more sea cucumbers, sea urchins, and the giant clam called gooey ducks. Those are species commercial divers harvest.
We don't know what's going to happen with the dive fisheries in the long run. It doesn't look very promising, though.
Phil Dougherty is executive director of the Ketchikan-based Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association. It recently released an economic report from the McDowell Group, a Juneau-based research firm. The report estimates regional otter numbers will soon hit 20,000, more than double the population about 8 years ago. And by 2015, it will more than triple.
We don't see a real management plan out there that would even slow down the growth, let alone trying to keep otters out of areas where they aren't in yet.
The report estimates otters have taken about $22.5 million in the species' diver's harvest, plus Dungeness crab, using the wholesale value. Add in businesses that support the dive and crab fisheries, and the figure grows to just over $28 million. That includes $9 million of sea cucumbers, just over $4 million in gooey ducks, almost $4.5 million in sea urchins, and about $5.3 million in Dungeness crab.
That's a very narrow way of looking at sea otters' role in the ecosystem.
California activist Jim Kierlin lobbies Congress to continue protecting sea otters. He says their return to areas where they were virtually extinct is good for the marine ecosystem.
When you have large colonies of sea urchins, which occur when you don't have sea otters, they can destroy kelp forests. And sea otter predation on sea urchins actually enhances the productivity of kelp forests. And scientists have documented this effect in Southeast Alaska and elsewhere over decades of studying this.
The Marine Mammal Protection Act bans most hunting. Alaska natives can harvest otters for subsistence use, but they can only give or sell whole pelts to other tribal members. Other sales are allowed if the pelt is substantially altered, such as being turned into handicrafts or clothing. Alaska's congressional delegation is pushing legislation that would allow natives to sell whole pelts to anyone. Dougherty says the Dive Fisheries Association funded the recent report to share its concerns.
We need to make sure that everyone is fully aware of what's going to happen with our shellfish fisheries in Southeast Alaska. And if at the end of the day, people still don't want to react to it and they will allow the sea otter population to wipe out the shellfish fisheries in Southeast Alaska, that's the decision that we need to know, that our divers need to know at this point in time, so they can make a decision as to what their future is going to be.
A separate U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service research effort is trying to determine the extent of sea otter population growth. It's shown a 13% boost in southern Southeast. Additional research, due out soon, will provide numbers for the northern part of the region. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
There's a new reality show featuring commercial fishing in Alaska. TLC's new series, Hook, Line, and Sisters, premieres on December 29th. It follows the lives of the Andersons, a family of fishermen who have only 3 months to brave the Alaska wilds for a payday. 7 episodes have been ordered. The press release from TLC says Hook, Line, and Sisters is an inside look into a little-explored territory, the wild, unpredictable, and competitive world of deep-sea commercial fishing. Never mind that herring and salmon fishing are generally conducted in relatively shallow waters. Anyway, Patriarch Dean Anderson is described as a grizzled sea dog, known for his aggressive fishing as much as his salmon hauls. As captain of the fishing vessel Memory Ann, he squares off against rival fishermen, hungry sharks, and his own hard-working family. His wife Susan referees family feuds and manages the family's finances. At the center of the action are the family's 2 girls, 26-year-old Sierra, who has her father's sea-loving spirit, and 21-year-old Memory, described as a fashionista who's not quite as enthusiastic about fishing and presumably about wearing extra tufts and grundons.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you by commercial fishermen for Bristol Bay, permit holders and fishing groups standing together to protect and enhance the renewable fishing jobs and businesses of the Bristol Bay region.
And that's all for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KMXC's Jennifer Canfield in Kodiak, KUAC's Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.